You're listening to the Let's Be Real podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Andy Hughes and Denise Russo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special video edition of the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm Andy Hughes, and as you can tell, I have another person here with me. Her name is Denise Russo. She is the Global Head of Procurement Support Talent Development in the SAP Product Engineering Organization, and we're thrilled to have her. Denise is someone who I've learned so much from and is a big part of this podcast. While, yes, you've only heard really my voice and Scott Miller, Denise is a big part of it as well. And we're happy to announce that she'll be joining us here on some future episodes as a host. So welcome, Denise. We're excited to have you.
Thanks, Andy. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today, and I'm really looking forward to the future of Let's Be Real, but I also would love to thank you for the great work that you've put into interviewing such wonderful guests so far.
Well, it definitely couldn't have been possible without your support as well, so I really appreciate you doing everything that you've done so far. Why don't you give the listeners a little bit of a brief introduction about you and your work with SAP?
Oh, sure. So this is going into, I believe, my 13th year here at SAP. I came into SAP through SuccessFactors. I was formerly a customer of SuccessFactors before that. So I joined the organization from the lens of being a customer. I started as a professional services implementation consultant, but I really felt like I wasn't seeing the customer get the full value of their experience, and I wanted to stay with the customers longer. So I quickly moved into the product support area at SuccessFactors and ended up leading a team there for a while and created an organization called the Global Customer Experience Team, which was focused on being customer facing as well as the internal enablement function for customer support, as well as the escalation point and the bridge to the development organization, which were engineers, QA, and the product managers. That led to an opportunity about, I think, 8 years ago or so. I'm losing track of the time since it's been a while, but I moved into the development organization and created a program for triage inside of the SuccessFactors development organization. We focused on everything from enablement and coaching, leadership development, escalations, data analysis, and some other projects and program enhancements to really build a cohesive partnership between engineering and the product support side of the business. And then about 3 years ago, I had a great opportunity to meet Lee Tangredi, who is my now manager, and come over to the Ariba side of the house. And that was before Fieldglass joined Ariba. I joined the organization to really focus on things like change leadership and building a leadership development program, which we call Agile. And that program was very successful, and we were able to expand the team to grow out our technical product enablement functions, as well as our one-on-one engagement, our onboarding, early talent, diversity and inclusion, rewards and recognition, and appreciation, and so much more. So part of that initiative involved us looking for ways that we could really invest in giving people creative avenues for learning from leaders. And that's how Let's Be Real was born and how the podcast came to be. And I was just so thrilled, Andy, when you decided that you would raise your hand and be our host for it, and has done just such a wonderful job. And I definitely want to give a shout out to the behind the scenes man, Scott Miller, mm-hmm. for doing such a great job on the production as well. It's been so fun for me because a lot of the guests that we've had are peers and or friends or mentors of mine. And that's how it really started, was being able to bring people to the table that had interesting stories. And we continue to grow and develop, and I'm just looking forward to seeing where it goes from here.
Yeah, I am too. And yeah, your team has done some fantastic things, and we're really excited to have you, you know, have a bigger role now with Let's Be Real podcast. So we're really excited about that. Before we get to the Andreas Heckman interview, which was fantastic, I wanted to kind of talk about a couple of topics that we were talking about after we had stopped recording, because he brought up a number of topics during the call and even after, even before we started recording too. It was just a great conversation. So before we kind of get into that conversation, I wanted to talk about a couple of topics that he brought up. The first one being this idea that things are impossible in customer support. We hear it all the time, you know, different things it's impossible. You can't do this. People probably thought maybe this podcast, it's impossible to do that, or it's impossible to get this guest on the podcast. But we had to try, and we found that, you know, if you continue to reach out to people and ask for help, nothing is really impossible, is it?
I agree with you, because everything is possible within the limits of our own mind. I think about some of the guests we have had in our past. Some of them, nobody would have thought we would have had those guests be able to be on the podcast. And a lot of it takes not just the thought, but it takes the action. And Andy, you're somebody that takes action. And that's something to be commendable for you as a leader, that you took a thought and did something with it. And I think that's what makes things possible. I recall a time I worked for an organization that produced this event called the Avon Breast Cancer 3-Day. It's one of the most meaningful jobs that I've had in my long tenure of a career. And I'll never forget that there was a t-shirt that we made and these big banners that we made where the CEO of the organization turned the word impossible and just put one little part between the I and the M, and that apostrophe turned impossible to I'm possible. And it struck me far back then, early on in my career, that the only limits that we have are limits we put upon ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I feel like it's very relevant to the time that we're in right now. I mean, companies that didn't think they could work from home are now working from home. They didn't think it was possible to pull it off. And even here at Ariba and SAP, we've learned a lot of things that we never thought we could accomplish, but we've been able to do it through working with others and building those connections and sharing those ideas. So I feel like this idea is interesting, because, you know, it really is a mindset, and you really need to do everything that you possibly can and reach out for help, and the results will come.
Absolutely. I think that's a really key thing to keep in mind, Andy, about the difference between change management and change leadership. You can manage change, meaning you're just trying to get through a change, or you could lead yourself through something transformational and amazing. And I think that many of us have taken these opportunities during these times of adversity and overcame those with really great opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other topic I wanted to talk about just quickly here is being yourself as a leader. You know, sometimes when you have a title of a manager or leader, sometimes some people think you have to become someone else, but that's not really the case, right? I mean, you should really just be the best version of yourself and really commit to development, yes, and continue to learn yourself. But also at the end of the day, I think it's really important to just be yourself, and success should follow.
Absolutely. Authenticity matters, and people do what people see in others. And so if you can't come to be your true self in front of others, then it's really hard to keep up with this false version, or this actor, if you will, that might be on the stage, as opposed to being your true self. I think that that's a really key element in being able to be a good leader. Another thing you mentioned is about development, and leaders don't happen in a day, and you don't become a leader by going to a class. You develop over time, and leadership is really about influencing others. Professional development is extremely important. I myself continuously look for opportunities to grow and to develop and to meet others and to add value, and that helps bring the results that we're looking for ourselves as well as for the business.
Yep, absolutely. And these were just two topics that Andreas Heckman brought up, but what we're going to do now, without further ado, let's take a listen to our conversation with Andreas Heckman. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special video edition of the Let's Be Real podcast alongside Denise Russo. We're very excited to welcome our next guest here. He's the Executive Vice President and Head of the Customer Solution Support and Innovation Organization within SAP Product Engineering. It's always a pleasure to talk to Andreas Heckman. Andreas, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. Thank you for joining us, and how are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Andy. How are you? And Denise, hope you're well as well.
We're doing fantastic. You know, 2020 has definitely been an unprecedented year. How is everything going with you, and how are you and your family dealing with the pandemic?
Well, I'd say very well. I think we can say we find ourselves in a kind of luxurious version of the problems that all the others face. So you know, I've got a nice environment. I have a room. I can sit and work in quiet. I have equipment here. The kids are out of the house, so we don't have to worry about homeschooling and other things. Thankfully, both of our parents are still healthy and not impacted. But it's overall, all things considered, we're doing very well, I would say.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, I know it definitely affects everyone in different ways. How has it been with the business side of it? Because, you know, there's obviously a personal side to it, and there's also the business side as well in a pandemic. I feel like the team as a whole, just the whole organization, we've seen a lot of great success despite most of our teams working from home.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we've seen areas where we've been better than ever in these times. If I look at what some of the product support teams have been delivering, not only did our business continuity measures work brilliantly immediately from day one on, we never had a single hiccup, so we served our customers really, really well from day one on, and the customer satisfaction figures are at all-time highs. So that's a result of having consultants on the bench that we hired to work for us, work with us. So we had at a certain time, we had even like an unprecedented level of capacity in some areas. And so that turned out to accelerated project work and all-time highs in CSAT. So overall, I think we've been doing very well. The same goes for the other teams, for AIS, for IBSO. We had two very strong quarters at the beginning of the year, the CXS team, the MCC team, everyone, just simply everyone. It was a phenomenal performance of the entire organization without a single exception. So I'm super proud of that. And for me personally, I mean, it was interesting because the moment where the lockdowns, the office closures started, that was the moment our organization went live, right? So in March, essentially. So we had our first, which was supposed to be an offsite planning session. It's supposed to be in Pittsburgh, by the way, at the new Ariba office. That was the plan. And we just couldn't pull it through. So we had to stop it going virtual. And that was quite an experience, an exhausting one, I have to say. So doing all of that remotely, fully focused on the topics, a lot of work to accomplish. I found it quite exhausting, but very interesting. And again, we delivered. It was good.
So speaking about that being such an exhausting experience, Andreas, to be our best for others, we need to take care of ourselves. And you shared recently how important it is for us to take time to recharge and reflect instead of react. And in such a senior position as what you have, and where so many people, I'm sure, are constantly competing for your time, what could you recommend to the leaders that are listening as to how to take time for reflection and recharging?
Yeah, sometimes you have to make tough decisions, right? I mean, the leaders we have, they are extremely helpful people. They are passionate about their jobs. They are empathetic. So they want to help, they try to help. The downside of that is, you know, many of us, myself included, I'm guilty here, it's hard to say no to certain things. And the answer to your question is, you have to start saying no, no matter what. I mean, you just have to really focus on the essentials. I know it's easier said than done, but you just have to do it. And you have to say no, say, okay, today 4 p.m. done, because I have such a pile of stuff to work through. No more meetings, no more calls. And I really got very tough, or my office also on my behalf, got very tough in terms of what meetings to accept, what meetings to decline, focus on the essentials and so on. And then for me personally, what helped, as I also mentioned in the blog post that you know, on LinkedIn around the topic, is really to have a couple of, say, rituals or certain standards that you just introduce in your day. Like, don't make, like what I did at the beginning, have lunch at your desk. Do just get the camera off and eating while having calls and stuff. But you know, really just fight for that freedom, say 60 minutes, 90 minutes, complete off, walk around the block, wherever you live, whatever you can do, and just force yourself to do it. It helped me a lot. And I was very guilty of not doing any of it at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Well, we're thankful that you accepted this meeting, and you know, we appreciate your time One thing I would love to ask you here, could you tell us a little bit about your path to SAP? I know that you ran your own IT consultancy business for healthcare solutions in Germany at one point. What was that experience like, and how did it lead you to SAP?
Oh my God, yeah, it's I'm really a little bit different type of animal, I can tell you that. So I have a very untypical path into SAP. So yes, so I studied EE, so electrical engineering. At the time, data technology, that was like a substream of electrical engineering that I studied in Darmstadt at the time. And so through that, I came to like PCs at the time, the PC, you know, 286 and so on. This was big at the time. So you are too young, you probably don't even know that anymore. But at that time that was big. So I started to get into that. So in parallel to my studies there, I did a lot of volunteering work for the city of Mannheim. At the time, we're working with underprivileged teenagers and so on, that, you know, were in foster homes. Take them out for several weeks on some vacations into surrounding countries and so on. And in that, there was just a couple of friendships I made, and one guy there, he was dealing with medical technology. I was, you know, dealing with all this computer stuff at the time. And so we were like, how about computers in medicine, you know? And Germany was very well behind at that. So we started developing software for doctors and hospitals so that they can move away from papers and so on. I sold the company at some point in time and to one of the market leaders in Germany. And there again, I met some people that had friends that worked in the SAPs, in the wider SAP space. And so just one thing led to the other. And eventually I just decided to join a partner of SAP, Digital Equipment, DEC. And just 11 months later, SAP folks I met, they said, hey, you should join us, come over. Which I did, and then I started, you know, now it's like 21 years with SAP at this moment, but over 15 of them, I wasn't in Germany. So I started my time in SAP in the US. I used to live in Miami, I used to live in the Bay Area. Then I moved to Switzerland for almost 3 years. I spent a total of 10 years in China since then. So even though I have a German passport, and SAP is like an originally German company, I didn't spend much time in SAP in Germany, so.
Now that's very interesting. Now, when you started with SAP, was it always a goal of yours to become a leader, or were you more considering, you know, being kind of like an individual contributor or an expert? Was leadership always something that you wanted to look into eventually?
Never, ever. So I basically, from the beginning, I said, I want to be an expert. Leave me alone with management. That's not my cup of tea. So at the very beginning, there's still a lot of people laugh about it today because they remember I always said, leave me alone. I'm not a manager. I will never be a manager. And so essentially what happened is that they always gave me this temporary assignment when I said, we just need you to do it 6 months, you know, just 6 months and we will find a permanent solution and you can go back to being an expert. And so it happened year over year, and then it is handed off one thing and they gave you another and so on. And at some point in time, also based on a lot of feedback I received from people, I realized that maybe I should reconsider. And so then I really committed myself, not so much to management, but to leadership. I think for me, this turned out to be a big difference. I still don't like management, as in operational management, very much. But what I do like is leading in topics, leading people, joining forces with other people and bringing topics forward. That's what really energized me in all of that. And so I gave in eventually. And so that was me, the leader then.
You've had such an interesting tenure while you've been here, Andreas, and you've already shared some great stories with us. Can you think of a defining or a transformational moment in your career as a leader and what that might have been?
Not so much one moment. I think I was very privileged because I could work with a lot of absolutely outstanding leaders in SAP, and they taught me a lot. This is sort of the type of guy I am. I wouldn't be able to tell you this one person she or he is like everything about her or him I aspire to or something like that. But I really learned a lot from different people. So I saw how different people really work brilliantly in defining strategy, defining vision, and their perspective on what we should do for customers. So I really sucked that up. And then other people, they inspired me a lot, how they worked with people, how they actually got people to follow them, how they inspired people. So I really got my bits and pieces all over the place, but definitely say the times I worked in AGS and Active Global Support, I was very privileged to meet a lot of very strong leaders, also board members that, you know, had a very, very pushy, strong way of getting things moving. So I think I learned a lot that I'm still living off at this moment in these times. And then customers taught me a lot. So my time in Switzerland, I was actually at a customer for these almost 3 years at Nestle in Vevey. At the time, it was the largest ever SAP program that was run by a customer. And I learned so much being permanently inside the customer. I was sitting with customers in the office. So it's not an SAP room. It's me alone with some people from customers. So I understood where they suffer, what their problems are. And so, you know, my interactions with customers throughout these years, they are invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that, because it sounds like even though it's hard to maybe pinpoint just one leader that has had an impact or influence on you, one of the strategies that you've shared and outlined for us for your global teams is to foster amazing talent. What makes a productive team, in your opinion?
Well, what makes a productive team is it's all about behaviors. It's, you know, there's this term high-performing team, right? It's used a lot. People, actually, it's misused a lot, I would say, even. When I look at what a team should really do, teams should be worried about their peers, about how the team overall is doing. I always have this test question when I'm with a group of people and we talk about the topic of high performing team, and I always ask them a question. I say, I do not want an answer from you, so I don't want to hear any answer. You give yourself the answer in the head. And that's always the test question. Say, if you see one of your team members struggling, like really badly, like they're in real trouble, what is it you feel? Don't answer me. What is it you feel? Do you feel like, oh crap, I have to jump to the rescue, offer my help? You know, I say, can I help? Is there anything? Do you want to talk about it? Something like that. Am I completely indifferent? And I'm like, whatever, it's not my problem. Maybe I feel even happy. It's like, yeah, one going down makes me look better. Right. And so, as I said, never want to hear the answer. But typically in the face, you can see people go like, And the reality is you find very, very few teams, if at all, that have all what a real team, a high-performing team should be doing, which is really take care of each other, give yourself feedback all the time, try to lift the water, raise the water level for the entire team, you know, be better as a team. That's what I'm trying to get. And it's super difficult to get. Everyone's talking about it. The truth is almost no one's there.
You talked a bit, Andreas, about living in all these different countries, and it sounds like now in what you're describing, there's a lot of importance on diversity of thought in people. Could you share with us and the listeners how important diversity is for your team?
It just doesn't work without. It's not even it's better or worse. I believe without diversity, it doesn't work. It's very simple. You will always be in a suboptimal state if you do not truly embrace diversity in a team. Look at the teams that nobody wants to be part of. It's like where the manager surrounds herself, himself with a group of people they've always had around them, loyal people, you know, always say yes to everything, agree immediately, and just execute whatever the manager says. This is the worst possible scenario you can find yourself in. Yes, it's fast that very moment. And yes, it feels good. Everybody's like, yay, let's go. You can be sure that you are not getting the best outcomes, the best results, the best decisions. You will always be mediocre. That's for sure. And I've done it. And I have to say, I was one of these type of leaders when I became first a manager many years ago. I was exactly the same. Okay, I have to be the smartest in the team. I have to know everything best. I have to set the direction and I have to get them to follow my direction. That was my perspective on management at the time. Horrible, really horrible. If I think back today about the type of guy I was, it's like I would be running away if I have to work for a guy like that. And I learned my lesson really. It takes time. It is, and the discussions are, the moment they happen, they don't feel as easy, right? You have different opinions. You need to bring them together. There may be even emotions in that and so on. But, so yes, it's hard. But once you're through and you look back and you see what you got and how sturdy these decisions are, how you know how they can resist challenges, how long living they typically are, how you have accomplished your change management with all the people involved because they've all bought into it, they've been part of the decision. It's so many pluses at the other end, it's unbelievable. So once you've done that, you can never do without.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think diversity goes hand in hand with innovation too. And I love the fact that the word innovation is part of the name in the organization, because especially in a time like today where things are constantly changing daily, weekly, whatever it is, I think diversity is really important to have just so you can innovate. Because as you were saying, you don't want everyone to just agree. You want different ideas to be thrown out there. And I feel like it's really important to empower people to feel like they can share their ideas.
Yeah. Absolutely true, and also the innovation is an interesting topic because there seem to be so many definitions of innovation out there, right? Mm-hmm. So some people I think continuously mix up ideas with innovation. An idea is not an innovation. Mm-hmm. The other thing is also coming up with something new is not an innovation. If nobody uses it, if nobody gets value out of it, it's not an innovation. It's maybe an interesting idea and an interesting a realization of some idea, but it doesn't make an innovation. Innovation has to have a positive impact somewhere, and so that's what was so intriguing for me, and accepting to run this organization because there isn't a strong innovation element in it. And right now we are looking at almost every team, we are looking at what does innovation mean. And the company is changing big time, our customers are changing big time. If you look what really happens on the ground, I mean, we talk, you could say more marketing level, we talk about intelligent enterprise, we used to talk about digital enterprise and digital transformation and all of these things. At the end of the day, if you look what happens in customers, is that their solution landscapes look fundamentally different. The decision making looks different. The teams that are there on the customer side look different. There are no more IT organizations. They want more cloud solutions to be part of their processes. And these cloud solutions, together with what may be left and on-prem components, builds their mission critical processes. They are hybrid processes. They're much, much more complicated to operate. There's more points that can fail, making the process not available. So all of us need to change. How do you support such an environment? How do you troubleshoot in such an environment? What's the customer's role with all the changing, you know, IT folks going away, LOBs at the customer making decisions, more power users taking over? So how does that translate into a customer's day in a life? What do they need to do? What are the tools we need to give them? How do we need to interact with them? It touches literally every single team in our organization that needs to transform, to be ready to meet the customers where they will be in a year or two down the road. And that excites me a lot. That's where, you know, working with the team, that's where I can be a leader rather than a manager.
Mm-hmm. When you say that, change means there's something that's constantly moving. And when we think of the word always, always is not necessarily a moving word. It's a static word, but it's so important to you that there was an intentional decision to how you created the idea that we are to delight customers, period, always, period. Can you share a little bit about how that came to be and why that was so important for you to construct that thought the way you did?
Yeah. So that was, I still even remember what room we were sitting in when that discussion happened. I don't think I will ever forget how we created that vision, and that we, no matter what we do, whether it's a service, an interaction, a product, whatever we do, we want to make sure the customers get a delightful experience. Now, in a typical world, when you come from a support environment or any other measuring CSAT or customer effort scores, of course, you're always setting a target. You said it's like 80%, 90% top box rating or a certain bottom box rating or whatever. You always set some KPIs on how you want to measure these typical customer feedbacks or customer experiences you're creating. The difference between this way and always is that you are defining your processes and you are defining a continuous improvement approach that always tries to push towards the 100.0%. It's not like 85%, okay, we're done, we're 85.5, so we even overachieved our target. It is a mindset, it is supposed to be the mindset of always pushing us up to the maximum. You know, if you look at airplanes, right? I mean, the way airplanes are built is not that they are 99% successful landings or 99% not crashing, right? This is always, they think about 100%. Everything they build with double securing it, triple securing it, and what happens this and that. So this is a typical thing where it's designed for always, always. There's still some unforeseens that can happen, we know that, but so this is the type of mindset I really want to adapt rather than the 85% mindset.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. You know, leaders always influence the people around them, and our podcast is designed for leaders. Let's Be Real was started to be able to really attract the idea of the concept that leadership is different than management. We also focus a lot on leaders being learners and a continuous sense of learning, as well as leaders being readers. I'm curious, what's a favorite book of yours on your bookshelf and why?
I need to have a look at my bookshelf here, but it would probably be the Blue Line Imperative. That is one thing of the books I really liked a lot. I also have Strategic Learning there. And I have a book that a friend of mine gave me. Let me just, this one that he highly recommended to me. I haven't read it yet. Can you see? It's called The Checklist from Atul Gawande. And so he gave me a personal note, hard to see, but anyway, believe me, it's there. There's a note in that where he said, you know, he went into early retirement. One of the individuals I was referring to, I learned so much from him, and he gave me that book. And so I will, that's going to be the next book I'm reading.
Awesome. We'll share your reading list with our listeners, and they'll be able to check those out as well. Andy, I'm going to pass it back over to you to see if there's any final questions that we might have and see what other things that Andreas may like to share that we didn't cover.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to note, you know, we talked a lot about like the customer experience, delighting customers always, and I heard you bring up the word empathy a little while back in one of your answers. How important is empathy, especially in a time like today, to really understand a customer and try to meet their needs as best as we can?
What answer are you expecting? Of course, it's super, super important. I have to say the one thing people always told me for as long as I can think is that I'm a quite empathetic person, which helped me a lot. It also has its downsides, though. In a position that I am, you may have to make some tough decisions every now and then. And if that involves people, that's where empathy really comes back to bite you. And that's where you probably have some bad dreams about it. And that's the moments you're not looking forward to. But you know, be it as it is, empathy, trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes and kind of getting that feeling what they must be going through right now, it is an absolute essential. If you don't have empathy, you cannot be a leader, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, No, I think that's always, and that's why, you know, the podcast is Let's Be Real, and the E in the real is stands for empathy. So that's definitely an important thing that, we like to talk about. I want to do a little bit of a bonus round here too, Andrea. So what are some things that you like to do outside of work? What are some of your hobbies?
Some of my hobbies. Well, now I have to make some admission here. So I play golf. Awesome. But I'm very bad at it, so that's
me too.
So that's one thing. Probably later tonight, Friday night, probably I go with my wife to play nine holes. But so I have a 28 handicap, which is not at all good, but right now I'm playing like a 128 handicap, I feel sometimes. So it's really not great, but I like it. So I enjoy golfing. I like it a lot. Lately we're doing it a bit more. The last years I almost didn't play a single round. That's one thing. Cooking, I'm super passionate about cooking. A lot of foodies in my friends, our friends, so we get a lot of guests, and we get a lot of invitations for cookouts, back and forth. I'm also doing a little bit technical stuff, so I'm very much into smart home type of things. So I even updated myself again, you know, from my old electrical engineering days. There's like bus systems and protocols and programming involved, so I always keep upgrading my house with these sort of gadgets and things, and so everything's voice controlled and sensors and automatic stuff. So that's just a little bit like a hobby. My wife is always like, oh my god, not another component or whatever, but she's enjoying the, you know, what happens then. So that she's very much enjoying.
Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. No, I think those were really all the questions that we had. We just want to thank you again for coming on. It was really interesting just to hear your thoughts on a lot of these topics and learn more about you and your path. You have a really interesting story, so just want to really thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it was great fun. Thanks so much for inviting me. I really like it.
Awesome. Andreas, have a great day ahead and a good weekend as well. And Andy, thanks for setting this up for us to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Andy. Have a great weekend as well.